Howdy, and welcome to Vintage Voices, a production of the Radio Players of the Theater Company of Sun City. This program comes to you each Sunday at 11 a.m. and Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. Currently, we are presenting classic plays in the Western genre featuring the voices of our own actors. Today's play is The Missing Heir, an episode of the Lone Ranger series that started as radio plays on January 30th, 1933, and ran through September 3rd, 1954. The Masked Man next appeared in children's books, on television, in movies, and in comic strips, showcasing his eternal appeal as part of our American culture. This episode's cast includes Dick Storer as the announcer, Kevin Fenner as the Lone Ranger, Orv McElfrish as Tonto, Dick Briett as Elk Heber, Bob Genko as Bogus Brown, Ed Gordon as Hector Moses, Jim Rice as Clem Perry, and Carter Graff as Pete Jones. I'm Ed Dennis. The play was directed by Jan Dennis, assisted by Gail Patterson. It was recorded and prepared for broadcast by Jim Eggers and Anthony Rios.
Hi-yo, Silver!
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo, Silver, the Lone Ranger. With his faithful Indian companion Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains led the fight for law and order in the early Western United States. Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again. Early one morning, the Lone Ranger's Indian friend Tonto rode into the town of Tobacco Ridge to buy supplies. When he returned to the masked man's camp, he reported,
"There plenty excitement in town, Kemosabe."
"Oh?"
"Crooks try rob bank last night."
"Have Bogus Brown and his pal Elk been in town?"
"Them the fellers tried to rob bank."
"Are you sure, Tonto?"
"Watchmen get good look at crooks in lantern light. And me hear description him give."
"Were they captured?"
No, they get away."
"Possibly heading west."
"That right."
"Leave the provisions you've bought in your saddlebags and start after those two."
"While me in town, Kemosabe, me follow crook's tracks. Me show you where we pick up trail outside town."
"Fine."
"One feller ride horse with worn shoe."
"All right, let's go, Tonto." "Easy, Silver."
"Easy, Scout."
"Come on, Silver."
"Come on, Scout."
By taking a roundabout route through the hills, the masked man and Tonto avoided riding through Tobacco Ridge in order to reach the western side of town. There, they drew rein.
"Whoa, big fellow. Whoa.
Easy,
whoa.
Easy, Scout. Here tracks, Kemosabe. Just like trail we lose yesterday."
"Yes, you're right, Tonto."
"Easy, Scout, easy, fellow. Now we plenty close to 'em."
"They're very clever at hiding their tracks."
"That right. We already lose trail once."
"We'll try not to lose it again. Come on, Silver."
"Come on, Scout."
More than half a day's journey ahead of the Lone Ranger and Tonto, Bogus and Elk slow their horses to a walk to rest the animals.
Whoa now.
Easy.
Oh.
Whoa.
"Yeah, when I saw the light out on the bank, I told you we wouldn't have a chance."
"How would I know a watchman was on duty inside?"
"I'll bet $20 that critter got a good look at us, too."
"Ah, shut up, will
you? You and your smart ideas."
"We're not in jail yet."
"We'll never reach the border if you try any more loco moves."
"We need cash, Elk, and I think I know where we can get it."
Well, if you're thinking of trying another bank robbery...
I'm thinking of a lawyer I know in the town of Mule Shoe.
Where's that?
Beyond the town of Amity.
Well, Amity's ahead of us.
Mule Shoe's west of it. It's a rich cattle town.
Who's your friend?
A lawyer named Hector Moses.
If he's on the level, how do you get to know him?
He's no more honest than we are. Fact is, he left the east to get away from murder charges.
What's he doing in Mule Shoe?
Practicing law, as far as I know. He might know how we can get a hold of some easy money fast.
If he does, he'd keep it himself instead of telling us about it.
Nah, not Hector. He's got to act like he's honest. But there's nothing to keep us from pulling a quick robbery and clearing out of town.
Well, I want to stop long enough in the next town to get my gear fixed and replace this critter's left front shoe.
What's wrong with your gear?
The stirrup leather needs replacing.
Well, we'll get a meal while it's been fixed.
That suits me.
Come on, get up here.
Let's go.
In the town of Amity, the killers stopped at a saddle shop where a 16-year-old redhead named Pete Jones worked. Leaving their horses with him, Bogus and Elk went to the restaurant directly across from the shop. A short time later, Bogus looked up from the plate of stew he was eating.
Elk, look. Look who just drew rein at the saddle shop.
That dude's no one I know.
It's Hector. Hector Moses.
Oh, yeah? What's he doing here?
I don't know, but I'll find out. I'll be back in a minute.
A few minutes later, Bogus returned to the restaurant with Hector Moses.
Meet my pal, Elk.
Well, how do you do?
Howdy.
Sit down, Hector.
Thank you. I have a problem, Bogus. Meeting you should help me solve it.
Well, what's the problem?
A wealthy client of mine died a few weeks ago, Bogus. You may have heard of John Perry.
No.
Who's John Perry?
He owned the Cloverleaf Ranch, one of the richest spreads in this part of the county.
Yeah?
John left a brother named Clem.
He inherits the ranch, eh?
Well, part of it. The rest is to go to John's son, Pete. Now, the trouble was that Pete and his mother were with the wagon train ambushed by Redskins 10 years ago. Pete's mother was found dead, and so were the rest of the travelers.
What about the boy?
His body was never found. John Perry died, believing his son is still alive.
Oh.
Now, Clem Perry is downright anxious to find the boy. Clem's unmarried and hopes that his nephew will carry on the Cloverleaf after he's gone.
How can he carry it on if no one knows where he is?
Well, I'm supposed to locate the boy.
And that's some job.
Yes, but I stand to collect a mighty handsome fee if I succeed.
Earning it won't be easy.
I have 3 months to find the boy. If I don't find him, the entire estate will go to Clem. But if you and Elk will cooperate, my job will be easier.
Oh? What do you mean?
That young redhead across the street is the same age Pete Perry would be if he were alive. He looks very much like John Perry.
Yeah?
I've learned he's an orphan. He works for his board and room in the saddle shop, and he knows nothing about his past.
What about it?
I may be able to palm him off to Clem as the real Pete Perry.
Oh, so that's your scheme?
Yes. Old Clem won't know the difference. I don't think I'll have any trouble selling him the idea that that youngster's his nephew.
What about selling the kid on the idea?
That's where you two come in. As a reputable lawyer, I can't try to talk the youngster into doing anything shady. But you can.
Me?
Yes. You and Elk talk to the boy, persuade him to go along with the masquerade, and I'll make it worth your while.
How worthwhile?
I'll pay you $500.
For a swindle like that? Not on your life.
Huh?
Split your fee with us or forget the deal.
My fee?
And that's not all.
Oh, what do you mean?
The kid stands to inherit a big ranch when his uncle dies, doesn't he?
Well, yes.
If we work this right, we can cut ourselves in for a share of the Cloverleaf.
How do you figure that?
The kid won't want anyone to know he's not Pete Perry once he's inherited the ranch.
Is that so?
By threatening to tell what we know, we'll have him right where we want him. We may end up living like cattle owners, huh, Hector?
Well, we may, if you talk him into going along with the idea.
You leave that to Elk and me.
Now look, I want to be in the clear in case this boy makes trouble.
Don't worry.
What about us?
You've nothing to lose. You're probably darting the law as it is.
Don't get any ideas about turning us in, Hector.
You know better than that, Bogus.
I know you're a killer.
The law here knows nothing about that murder.
I know about it, and I'll talk if you try a double cross.
You misunderstood me. I just want to be sure I'm covered when you talk to the boy. Leave me out of this deal until he agrees to pose as Pete Perry.
Ah, nice savvy. Come on, Elk. We'll go talk to the kid.
16-year-old Pete Jones listened thoughtfully to the proposition Bogus and Elk unfolded.
It's a great chance for an orphan like you, Pete. Clem Perry's an old man. When he dies, you'll inherit the Cloverleaf Ranch.
Well, I like living on a ranch and all, but I don't know if I want to go there unless Mr. Perry knows the truth.
Oh, and you'll be doing a lonesome old man a favor by going to the ranch and posing as his nephew.
Ride the mule shoe with us, and you'll be putting yourself in line for a fine inheritance.
It's a chance of a lifetime for a fella like you. You're a fool if you pass it up.
Without realizing how it happened, the red-headed orphan agreed to the plan the two killers outlined so glibly. Then Bogus signaled Hector, who was waiting in the restaurant. He joined the group.
It's all set, Hector. The youngster's going to Mule Shoe with it.
Well, glad to hear it. You'll not regret your decision, young man.
I hope not.
Well, let's get going.
When they reached Mule Shoe, Bogus and Elk went to Hector Moses' office while the scheming lawyer took Pete to the Cloverleaf Ranch. Bogus lit the lamp in the office. It was almost midnight before Hector returned.
Well, here's Hector now.
Yep.
Well, boys, it's all set.
How things go at the ranch?
Just fine. Clem welcomed Pete with open arms.
Did he suspect anything was wrong?
Nope. In fact, he's so pleased, he promised me a special fee for finding his long-lost nephew.
Good.
Oh, by the way, I told him I met two down-and-out cowpokes who need jobs.
Cowpokes?
Meaning you two. He's shorthanded right now, so he told me to send you right now. You get bunk at the ranch tonight and go to work in the morning.
Work?
It'll be a first-rate hideout for you.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want either one of you seen around my office, so get going. The ranch is a 45-minute ride from town. Now, Clem said you should stop at the ranch house to see him before you head to the bunkhouse.
Whoa, Scout.
A short time after Bogus and Elk left town, the Lone Ranger drew rein in the moonlit darkness near the scheming lawyer's lighted office.
Kemosabe.
Yes?
Tracks show crooks go into office. Come out right away.
Someone's still in the office.
Mm-hmm. There's sign in window.
Let me see. Hmm. Hector Moses, attorney at law.
Hmm. Why crooks there?
Moses may not have known they're killers.
Oh.
Over here, Tonto. Easy, steady, big fella. I want to ask him a few questions about those two.
Oh, who can that be? Now listen, if you two have come here to...
Are you Hector Moses?
Yes, but
don't be alarmed by my mask.
If you are here to solicit my services as an attorney...
I'm here for information. May I step inside?
Now, hold on, mister.
I'll not detain you long.
This is highly irregular.
A couple of killers named Elk Heber and Bulgus Brown were here ahead of me.
How did you know that?
Tonto and I have been following them for over a week.
Tonto?
Yes, my Indian friend.
During the 20 years I've spent in the West, I've heard a lot about a masked man who travels with an Indian named Tonto.
In that case, you know my mask doesn't mean I'm an outlaw.
You're the Lone Ranger.
That's right. What's wrong?
Why, nothing, sir. It's just that I never expected the pleasure of meeting you. I'm surprised and honored. I just never thought that you'd be the one that...
Hector Moses' mealy-mouthed flattery belied the panic in his heart. Having guessed his caller's identity, he knew Elk and Bogus were sure to be captured. He knew, too, that when they were behind bars, they would tell the law that Hector Moses was also wanted for murder. Thinking of the derringer in his desk drawer, Hector tried to think of a way to draw it and take the masked man by surprise.
Of course, I didn't know they were wanted by the law. When they asked me for directions, I gave them the information they wanted. I'll draw a map and show you exactly the route I think they'll travel.
On the pretext of reaching for a pencil and paper, Hector opened the desk drawer, grasped the derringer, and said,
"All right, freeze, mister."
"What's the idea?"
"Surprised you, eh?"
"Yes. Why the gun?"
"You're not going after Bogus and Elk."
"No."
"You're through hunting outlaws."
"You're going to kill me?"
"That's right."
"How do you expect to get away with it?"
"I'll tell the sheriff that you broke into my office and I shot you in self-defense."
"You may not have a chance to tell that story."
"Huh?"
"I didn't come here alone. My Indian friend Tonto is outside the window."
"Why, that's impossible."
Hector turned for a moment to cover the window.
"Come here, you!"
In that split second, the masked man stripped his arm.
"Ow! Hey, let go of me!"
"Drop the gun!"
"Ow!"
"Drop it or I'll break your arm. I said drop that gun."
"All right."
"That's better."
"Kemosabe, me hear cry."
"Come in, Tonto."
"What happened?"
"Hector Moses is trying to protect Bogus and Elk."
"I had to do it."
"You were trying to kill me."
"I didn't want to kill you."
"Tie and gag him, Tonto."
"Oh, no."
"I'll leave you here to guard him while I follow Bogus and Elk."
Following the directions Hector had given them, Elk and Bogus had ridden directly to the Cloverleaf Ranch house. Clem and Pete were in the kitchen where the 16-year-old was eating cold turkey sandwiches and milk. Standing inside the kitchen door with his hat in his hand, Elk explained.
"Well, the rest of the house was dark, so we came to the back door, Mr. Perry."
"Well, I'm glad you did. Come in and help yourself to some grub if you're hungry."
"Well, thanks, Mr. Perry. We are kind of hungry."
"Hey, it looks to me like you're enjoying a first-rate spread, Pete."
"I'm eating as much turkey as I could hold, Elk."
"This is the happiest day of my life. But dagnabbit, I sure wish my brother would have lived to see it."
"Well, after Mr. Moses left, I found out I really am Pete Perry."
"What's that?"
"That's right. There's no mistake about it."
You're sure of that, huh?"
"Dead sure. Pete was born in this house 16 years ago. When he was 6, he and his mother started east to visit her folks."
"Hector Moses says the wagon train was ambushed."
"It was. But I never believed that my Pete was killed. And now that I've seen the birthmark on Pete's arm, I know he's my nephew."
"Birthmark?"
"That's right. Pete has a cloverleaf birthmark on his right upper arm."
"Well, I'll be..."
"When he was 3 days old, his dad changed the brand of this spread from the JP to the cloverleaf. It's been that way ever since. And the brand's just like the mark on Pete's arm. His dad had it done that way. Roll up your sleeve, Pete, and show him the mark."
"Sure. There. There it is."
"Oh, I don't believe it. Can you see that?"
"That's sure identification."
"Does Hector know about this?"
"That scheming shyster. Pete told me how he planned to fool me by getting a boy to pose as my nephew. It's a doggone good thing I never told him about the birthmark."
"So you told him all about the plan, Pete?"
Sure, I did.
Why, you...
Hey, what's the idea of the gun?
Don't try reaching for yours.
What?
We can't get away with it now, but we can take whatever money's found around here and clear out. Take the old man's gun, Elk.
Don't try it.
Hey, look at the window. The masked man.
Get him!
As Bogus whirled around the fire, a silver bullet smashes his gun. Seconds later, another bullet grazes Elk's hand. The killer drops the weapon he had drawn. Clem Perry snatched the gun from its holster and covered the disarmed outlaws.
Make a move and you'll stop living.
Keep him covered while I come inside.
I'll do that, mister. Don't move, you two, or I'll shoot. Where in the world did you come from, mister?
I've been following these fellows for a week, Clem. Their trail led to your kitchen door.
Why do you know this masked man, Uncle Clem?
You're doggone right I do, Pete. He and his engine pal helped your dad and me round up some rustlers who were stealing our stock a few years ago.
I was sorry to hear of your brother's death.
Yeah, well, I lost my brother, but I found my nephew. Meet Pete, mister.
How are you, Pete?
Well, I'm fine now. But Bogus and Elk had me plenty worried for a minute.
According to my nephew, they're mixed up in a scheme with Hector Moses.
Tonto's with Hector Moses now.
If that double-dealing lawyer squealed on us...
He didn't have to. I know your record.
He's as bad as we are.
What do you mean?
That skunk's wanted for a 20-year-old murder in Chicago.
If that's the case, he'll pay for his crime. Now, how about tying up their hands for the trip to town, Clem?
After the Lone Ranger left with the prisoners he planned to turn over to the sheriff in town, Pete shook his head.
Doggone it, I don't understand it.
Understand what, Pete?
Well, a masked man helping to round up rustlers, catching Bogus and Elk like that?
You're not the first person to question his past, Pete, and you won't be the last.
Why does he wear it?
Because he's the Lone Ranger.
Hi-yo, Silver, away!
We hope you've enjoyed The Missing Heir. Join us again next month for our fifth episode in this series, Bad Man's Revenge. And visit the Vintage Voices website at huntleyradio.com to hear any of our 26 previously recorded radio plays. And now, a word about our summer play at Sun City.
Hello, this is Jan Dennis, director of Vintage Voices. It will be my privilege this summer to also direct a stage production of Arsenic and Old Lace. I hope that some background in this classic play will encourage you to see it on one of three evenings this July. On January 6, 1941, Franklin Delano Roosevelt stated in Congress that four freedoms should prevail everywhere in the world: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. 4 days later, Arsenic and Old Lace opened with Boris Karloff somewhat reluctantly making his Broadway debut. He was convinced to take the part when told that one of his lines after he had just murdered a man would be, "I killed him because he said I looked like Boris Karloff." Later that year, Joe DiMaggio achieved a 56-game hitting streak. Joe Louis defended his heavyweight boxing title 7 times. And as you know, Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. 2 years earlier, Joseph Otto Kesselring, a former actor, singer, music teacher, community theater director, and vaudeville producer, had sent Howard and Dorothy Lindsay a copy of his script, Bodies in Our Cellar. Howard purchased the play and revised it extensively with Russell Krause, who with him also produced Life with Father and State of the Union on Broadway. Although they changed the title and much of the content from straight drama to farcical comedy, the team still credited Joseph Kesselring as the author. Arsenic and Old Lace proved to be a welcome diversion from World War II woes as it ran for 1,444 performances in New York and 1,337 in London. The story of Abby and Martha Brewster, their theater critic nephew Mortimer, and his crazy and criminal brothers is an irresistible mix of mayhem and madness. Beneath its absurdities, however, are messages about family loyalty and the Roosevelt freedoms of speech, worship, and charity, if a little misguided. Joseph Kesselring died in 1967 at age 65 with no idea that just one of the 12 plays he wrote would, after 77 years, still be enjoyed as a timeless American treasure. We hope to see you at the theater.
Tickets for the Theater Company of Sun City's Arsenic and Old Lace will be sold beginning on Tuesday, June 26th. The play will be performed on the Drendel Ballroom stage at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, July 18th, 19th, and 20th. For further information, contact Tina at 847-269-4366. That is 847-269-4366.